Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 343 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we are going to be doing a bit of an addendum to our DIY series that I completed a few weeks ago, and we're going to be talking about plumbing and electrics. So this is a whole separate category, I think, that deserves its own topic, its own show. And like I say, that's what we're going to be talking about today, sort of plumbing and electrical jobs that you can do around the house. Before we get into it, I want to remind listeners that at the end of the show, we'll be giving away the Greenhouse Gardening book by Adrian Wilde. That will be given away to a patron at the end of the show, so stick around for that. Right, let's get into it then. Plumbing, electrics. We're going to start with electrical stuff. Now, I'm not lumping plumbing and electrics together because they're similar in any way other than they both fall under a category of work that includes some things that we really can do ourselves that we might not realize. Now, there's a lot of things that we cannot do, and as just regular DIYers, there are things that I personally won't go near. And you know, I'm a really experienced builder. I won't go near a lot of the plumbing and electrical work, but there are things we can do. We all have different skill sets and different abilities, and there are certainly some things within the world of electrical and plumbing stuff that we can do. But within the world of electrics, let's start there. We have to be aware electricity can be dangerous, particularly if you get it wrong and don't think. So one of the first things I want to talk about is safety. And you know, you want to know your fuse board. You want to know, first of all, you want to know where your fuse board is, and you want to know how to operate it, because within it, what you'll have is a series of fuses. Now, these fuses are basically little bits of wire that are designed to, if the system is getting too hot and overloaded, they will melt, they will blow, and they will break the system before any harm is done elsewhere. That's how they're designed to be. So you'll have an individual fuse, usually for lots of different things. In most houses, certainly with a modern fuse board, you'll have one fuse and it should all be labelled up. So one fuse will say sockets, or maybe downstairs sockets. One fuse might say lighting, one fuse might say cooker. And if you turn that fuse off, it will stop all of the power getting to that appliance or that set of things. You should also have one master fuse, a master switch, that if you turn that off, you turn off all the electricity to the whole house. So that's the first thing, is to understand your fuse board so that you can isolate and make sure that whatever you're working on doesn't have electricity going to it and is super safe. Now, beyond that, I want to talk a little bit about essential kit. An essential electrical kit for any DIYer really should include a pen tester. It's a little tester that's shaped a bit like a big fat pen, and you would turn it on and you would hold it next to the wiring of whatever it is you're considering having a look at, and it will tell you if it's live or not. If it's live, it will light up and beep, and if it's not live, it will just stay as it is. And the reason we might want to turn off the fuses to just some of the things in the house rather than turn off all the electricity is because what that allows us to do is, let's say we're going to work on some lighting, we're going to move a light switch. We can turn off the fuse that is for lighting. We can go and check that lighting is dead using our pen tester. But then we can take our pen tester to somewhere else that is still live and check that our pen tester is working and make sure that that's telling us that the live thing is live and the dead thing is dead. And then we go back and check the dead thing one last time just to be triply sure that it is completely safe for us to work on. That's the first thing. Really important bit of safety there before you do any electrical work. Now, some other things that are going to be essential bits of kit: a screwdriver, usually a flathead screwdriver. You're going to want a knife or a stripper or some way of stripping insulation from cable if you're going to be making new connections or attaching new wiring. And you're going to want probably a socket tester if you're going to move all to sockets. A socket tester is a great piece of kit. You can just plug it in and it will tell you if the neutral is working, if the live is working, if the earth is working in that socket. Really well worth having. The next thing that I'm going to suggest having in your essential electrical toolkit is the phone number of an electrician. Someone, hopefully, if in an ideal world, someone who you've got a little bit of a relationship with, whether it's your local electrician that you have used or will use in the future, and just someone that if you do need that little bit of help that is available at the end of a telephone line. Really, really invaluable, I really do think. So with all that out of the way, let's talk about some electrical things that we can do ourselves. So I'm guessing that I don't need to tell you, we can all change our own light bulbs and change plugs and change fuses in plugs. These are all really, really simple things, but they do give us some of the basics that we can then go on with, particularly changing plugs. If we want to take a plug off, maybe we want to run a, for instance, when I've just built my office, I've got a little hole in the desk, not big enough to put a plug through, but big enough for the wire. So we would take the plug off, run the wire through, and then reattach the plug. And all you really need to do is just remember that wherever the colours went when you undid it, that's where the colours went when you do it up again. You know, that's the thing that you're going to learn from changing plugs. Now, that principle applies throughout. So generally speaking, in modern houses, in modern wiring, at least here in the UK, you're going to have three cables. You're going to have a brown live cable. So that is the electricity that comes from the fuse board. You're going to have a blue neutral cable, and you're going to have a yellow or a yellow and green or a green earth cable. These are the three main cables that we're going to find. So occasionally, if we've got a doubly switched light, if we've got a light with two switches, a switch either end of the room, we might have what we would call a three-core cable. So what I've been describing, we would call a twin and earth cable, because we've got twin cables in there plus an earth. We've got our live and neutral, that's our twin, plus we've got an earth. And if we had a three core and earth, we'd have a third cable in there before we have our earth. So we'd have four cables in total. And you're only really going to come across them in most instances if you've got a light switch that is switched in multiple places. But I think we're getting a bit down the rabbit hole there, so I'll try and come back up, zoom out a little bit, and we'll just talk about moving a light switch. If you've got a light switch in the wrong place and you want to move it, what you can do is you can just expose the area around it, take the front of the light switch off so you can see all of the wires in there. Obviously, make sure that it's safe and it's not live first. If you're in any doubt for any of these things, of course, use a professional. But what we can do is then we can move that light switch by basically anywhere that cable can reach. We can just move it and then reattach it to the wall. We can take out a chase in the wall, remove some of the wall so we can move the cabling in behind it, and then put it all back, replaster over the top, make it good. All we're really doing is moving something from one place to another. That's a principle we can apply across the board for most things when it comes to electrical work. So you can do it with plug sockets and things like that. Now, if you're going to want to extend the cable, then what you're going to want to do is get a junction box that is rated for that type of electrical work. So best to speak to your supplier, make sure your junction box is up to the task. And you can basically join the cables within that junction box. So within the junction box, you might have three or four terminals. And what you would do is you would place all of your wires that are currently in your light switch into those terminals. And then on the other side, you put the same color wires from a new piece of wire. And then you can extend it. And then you can move things further from their source, a little bit further away than perhaps where they were, if you need to do that. Now, whenever you're doing something like that, it's worth remembering that people come along and put pictures up, don't they? And people drill holes in walls. So you should always have your cable runs where they are really quite obvious where they will be once the wall is put back and you can't see them anymore. So they should always run vertically or horizontally from your switch. That way, you know those are the areas to avoid when drilling in a wall. And that's something you should know anyway in any house. You know, if you've got a switch or a socket on the wall, you should avoid putting holes in that wall anywhere vertically or horizontally from those fittings. Something else you can do yourself, I've done it in this house, is we've replaced a lot of our covers on our plug sockets for the ones with the USB ports in. They're really, really easy to wire up. It's just the same amount of wiring as your regular plug socket. So you can, again, isolate it, make sure it's safe to work on, take the faceplate off, get a new faceplate with USB ports on it, and just connect the wires up at the back. So when you look on the back of these new faceplates, you'll see it'll have an E, an L, and an N, and that tells you where the earth, the live, and the neutral go. So changing a light fitting or a socket face is really simple in that way. You just basically take the old off, put the new on, and just make sure that everything is going to the right connection, earth, live, and neutral. It's as simple as that. And there are lots more things you can do, but they're probably beyond the average DIYer. If you're not comfortable with anything I've spoken about so far, of course, use a professional. I'm not suggesting for one second that anyone stretches themselves out of their comfort zone on things like this. It should be things that you feel comfortable doing, but these are things that you can do. And I've also added some extra sockets to by extending our ring. That's not something I can really describe on a podcast very well, but there are great YouTube videos out there telling you how to do it. And just understanding how your system works is always a great benefit to anyone. So those are some electrical things that we can do around our house. And you can use this to put things like outside lights in or to put outside sockets in. So by just enhancing what we've already got, we can do some of that work ourselves. Right, next, we're going to change gears in a second and talk completely about plumbing. Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online, on your social media pages, or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated. Right, so next up, plumbing then. And again, we're going to start right at the start, and that is the source of the water, the place the water comes into the building. And you should have a stop tap there. It's really important, you know, beyond doing any kind of DIY, it's really important just from a house ownership or a house living in a house point of view that you know where your stop tap is, same as the fuse board, because if you've got any problems, that's where you can shut everything down. If you've got a leak that comes out of nowhere, you can stop the water. So know where your stop taps are, because that's going to allow you to then do some of the other work as well, which means that we can free up a load of stuff that might otherwise contain quite a bit of risk and make it risk free. So knowing where your stop tap is the first step. Being able to shut down the water supply to different parts of your house or your whole house is really, really important. Some of the things we can do plumbing wise is, some of them are super easy, things like bleeding radiators. So what can happen over time is your radiators, in most systems, your radiators are filled with water, the pipes that run to them and from them are filled with water, connected up to the boiler, and it creates this loop. And this loop is pressurized and it is completely filled with water. But occasionally, sometimes for various reasons, some air can get in there. And this air can find itself sitting in the top of some of your radiators, particularly on the top floors of your houses. So this is going to lead to inefficiencies in your heating system, which no one wants, whatever the cost of heating is, but especially at the moment. And what we can do is alleviate those problems by bleeding our radiators. That's what it's called. And it's basically opening a valve on the side of your radiators and allowing that air to pass out. And you can do a really simple test. If you turn all of your radiators on and just walk around your house, and I recommend doing this every year, just walk around your house with the radiators on and just run your hand over them and feel, are all four corners of your radiator nice and warm and hot? And if they're not, then chances are you've got some air trapped in there. And you can take something called a radiator key, which you can buy in any DIY store. They're really, really cheap, less than £2. and or if you don't have one, you can usually use a pair of needle nose pliers and just turn the little valve on the side of the radiator, which the key will fit, and you'll hear a hissing noise as the air leaves the system. Remember, it's a pressurized system, and as that air leaves, it will hiss out, and then eventually it'll start bubbling and gurgling before water comes out. And as the water comes out, you know, you've emptied all the air from that radiator. Tighten it back up, and that's it. You've bled your radiator. It's that simple. Everyone can do this. Now, on your system as well. Now, this might be something next time you get your boiler serviced. If you're not familiar with it, this is something else you should be familiar with. There will be, I've mentioned that your entire heating system is usually a pressurized system. So it will be sat there at 1 bar or 2 bar or whatever it's set for on your system. But there'll be a valve that allows water from the mains into that system to top it up if the pressure drops. So if you've had to bleed your radiators, the pressure will drop and you're going to want to open that valve and just get that pressure back up again. It sounds complicated, it sounds difficult, but it really, really isn't. And if you don't know where your valve is to increase the pressure on your radiator, the next time you have your boiler serviced or the next time you have a plumber in your house, ask them to show you and then you will know for future. So that's the first thing, just some general maintenance on our heating systems that we can all do. Next up, so there's kind of two parts to the plumbing in most houses. You've got the heating system and then you've got your hot and cold water that just runs to your taps and your toilets and your baths and your showers. And they're two very distinct systems. So we've spoken a little bit about the heating system. Next up, let's talk about the other system, just what we're going to call our hot and cold water. Now, we can speak about this system and break that down into two sections as well. We've got our pressurized pipe and our non-pressurized pipe. So if you think about it, our sink, look under any sink, you've got a pipe going to the tap, you've got a pipe going to the other tap, and then you've got a pipe coming from the waste. Now, the pipe coming from the waste is usually just some white plastic pipe, maybe about 1.5 inches round, and the pipes going to the taps are either plastic or copper, and they're usually around 15 millimeters. So think about it logically. The ones going to the taps, they're going to be pressurized. They've got water in them, and that water has got a force behind it ready to push it out the taps. And the unpressurized pipes are the ones going from the sink, the waste pipes. Now, you can do pretty much anything you want all the time on your waste pipes because there's no water running through them, assuming you're not running it through there, obviously. So if you need to alter your waste pipes, you can do that quite simply. Now, a little bit of maintenance we can do here. Underneath your sinks, you'll have a U-bend, a trap. And they should be fitted in such a way that they literally just unscrew either end, either side of that U. There'll be a fitting that you can just unscrew and you can take that out. Now, if you get a blocked sink, we've all been in a position where we're scrambling, trying to unblock a sink, and maybe we're using some kind of nasty chemical to put down there and dissolve whatever's down there. Well, you can just unscrew that U. It's really easy, and just turn it upside down, tap it out down the loo or outside into the compost bin or whatever, and then put it back. And that is going to clear your blockage far more effectively and far more economically sensibly than any chemicals that you're going to put down there. And again, that's another little thing that we can do ourselves rather than having to call someone else. So, you know, fixing your waste pipes is something we can all do ourselves because, again, it's something we can operate on when there's no threat of a leak. Because if things go wrong, then the worst thing that happens is you just can't use that sink for a little bit until you've fixed it. Whereas when you're working on the pressurized pipes, then, you know, you're going to want to make sure that that pressure is turned off. You're going to want to make sure that you've turned off that stop tap. Now, in recent years, there are something called push fit fittings come on the market, and some professional plumbers will use them. I use them all the time, and what they are, they're basically little plastic fittings that connect straight onto copper pipe and allow you to extend it, reroute it, change it. You yourself can put in your own outside tap somewhere that you don't have one. It's really quite simple. So I'm going to talk you and walk you through this process, and then you can extrapolate this out to somewhere else. So you can get push fit fittings that come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. So you're going to want to make sure it's the right size for your pipe. And generally speaking, if we've got a kitchen sink and we want to put an outside tap just outside it, this is how we could go about doing it. So you'll have a 15 millimeter copper pipe usually going to your cold tap. Now, you might have a 15 millimeter plastic pipe. So if so, so much the better. It's really, really simple there as well. You're going to want to cut that pipe. Now, you're going to want to do that with a pipe slice, a pipe cutter, a piece of equipment designed for it, but it's not particularly expensive. And then what you can do is you can add a push fit fitting. Now, these push fit fittings, generally, they just push straight on. Make sure they're really housed on there well, pushed on as far as they can go, and then there'll be a little fitting that you unscrew and that tightens it in place. So you can get these as a T shape with three connectors. So you can cut a small piece out of your pipe and then put your T in there so that you're connecting the original pipe back up with the top of the capital T, and then you'll have a new outlet which you can connect a new piece of pipe to. So you can put a new piece of copper pipe in there and then maybe a 90 degree elbow, again, push fit, connect it the same way, onto that pipe, drill a hole through the wall first, put another piece of pipe through that wall into your elbow, and then connect your pipe up on the outside, connect your tap, sorry, to the outside. Now, all of these things are things that you might want to spend a little bit of time researching, depending on what's available in your area, the different types of fittings, depending on where you live. But they're all things that you can do yourself. And of course, you've done all this with the stop tap turned off. Fix your tap to the wall, connect it up, turn your stop tap on, and boom, that's it. You are up and running with a brand new outside tap. Sounds complicated, sounds difficult, but it is something you can do yourself. Now, again, I'm going to suggest you do a little bit more research based on the actual project you want to do, but these are all things that you can do. I wouldn't recommend doing anything in and around your boiler as a DIYer. I certainly don't touch mine. I use an expert for that. But when it comes to just normal runs of pipe, they are things that we can do ourselves. So those are a few projects and things that we can think about doing ourselves slightly differently that perhaps we might have got people in for. Another one is replacing the inside of your cistern. If your flush has stopped working, it's usually just a case of replacing a simple part. And we all have different mechanisms in our toilet systems these days, depending on how long they've been there. I'm going to recommend you just take a photo of it. Take the lid off your cistern, take a photo, take it into your local builder's merchant, say, this is what I've got in my cistern. The flush isn't working. What do I need? And they'll tell you what you need to replace it. And the parts you buy usually come with their own instructions. But again, these are all things that we can do ourselves. And again, I will reiterate, when it comes to plumbing and electrics, if you're not comfortable, if it's a bit outside of your comfort zone, do get an expert in. But while they're there, ask them questions, pay attention, look at what they're doing, explain that you're not keeping an eye on them because you don't trust them, you're keeping an eye on them because you want to learn, and usually they won't mind. It will depend on the individual human, obviously, but I certainly don't mind. I really enjoy it when one of my clients takes an interest in what I'm doing and asks questions. I love explaining how the building works and why we do things in a certain way, but there you go. There's some things that you can be thinking about and hopefully add to your DIY repertoire in the future. Okay, that's it for the bulk of today's episode. Next up, we are going to do our patrons draw for the Greenhouse Gardening book by Adrienne Wilde. Ward Lock book, series edited by Alan Titchmarsh, Step-by-Step Gardening. It contains everything in here about greenhouse gardening, from buying a greenhouse to setting out your greenhouse, building the base for it, maybe using shades if you're in too much sun sometimes in the summer, heating, greenhouse heating if you want to go with that, irrigation, propagation, it's all in here. Perhaps you want to cool your greenhouse, using a greenhouse all year round, using composts, greenhouse hygiene, pests, everything is all in here, and we're going to be giving that away to a patron. So as I draw a name from the hat, it's one of our newer patrons, Annie Brazier. Annie Brazier, you have won the Greenhouse Gardening book, and to get that, all you need to do is send me an email at selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com with your address on, and I will get this sent out to you in the post. Thank you ever so much for listening, everyone, and I will be back next week. Again, I will just close out this episode with a request. Can you please, if you're enjoying this podcast, if you enjoy the content here, can you please share it with someone, share it with one other person, share it with someone you know, share it with someone at your allotment, share it with a neighbour over the fence, or share a link on your social media, but shout it from the rooftops. We're trying to grow our listenership here all month. I am asking this favour from you all. It's a great way you can support the show. Please try and share it. Thanks ever so much for listening, guys, and I will speak to you next week. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.